WTBQ. Hello and welcome to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us here today on your favorite radio station, WTBQ. And don't forget, we are now 93.5 FM as well as our very faithful 1110 AM. And I hope you're doing well today. And we're going to talk about ADHD today. And I want to get right into it because it's one of those topics. And I talk a lot about topics like this, but this is one of these topics that most of us feel, if we really think about it, that it seems so overblown. So many kids have ADHD. And now adults as well. What is behind that? I think about this often because, you know, when we were growing up, we never heard of this. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not legitimate, and that does not mean that it wasn't then. We just had not labeled it. But have we gone too far? Are we labeling it too much? Are we diagnosing it with not enough information or calling it something ADHD when it's not really? These are the questions I want to ask my guest today. He has written a wonderful book called The ADHD Explosion, Myths, Medication, Money, and Today. Today's Push for Performance. Stephen Hinshaw and Richard M. Schleffler have written this book, and Dr. Schleffler, who's a distinguished professor of health and economics at the public policy at the Goldman Public Policy Institute in University of California in Berkeley. And I want to welcome Dr. Schleffler to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
I'm fine. Good morning.
Thank you so much for writing this book. This is something that really needs to be addressed. I mean, so many kids these days are labeled ADHD, and it's just kind of so common, especially boys, and we're going to get into that. But you make a really powerful and very interesting statement in your book saying that school policy may fuel dramatic increase in ADHD diagnosis among children in the United States. That, to me, is a very powerful statement, and I'm very interested to see what backs that up? How does school policy have anything to do with it?
Well, that's an excellent question. Yeah, we've seen amazing spikes in the rates of ADHD over the diagnosis in the last decade, more than 40%, which is astronomical. One out of nine children now under 18 are diagnosed, and one out of six boys. So we were looking for some reasons why this might have happened. There's obviously no epidemic going on.
Right.
What's the cause? And so we examined a number of factors, and I won't detail them all, but the closest thing to a smoking gun that we came up with is school policy. So we looked across the United States at the enormous variation in the rates of diagnosis across all 50 states, and we found out that about 30 of the states had real spikes in their rates over the last decade, and what explained that, just looking at a map? And so we finally discovered that it had to do with the school policy in those states. Those states in the 1990s started to tie the funding of their local schools and also the salaries of teachers, promotion of principals, to test scores and graduation rates in those schools. And so this put the pressure on the schools to increase their performance and hence to look more seriously at finding children who had ADHD and getting them treated.
So does that like make them not be a part of the testing? Is this a kind of, well, ultimately it's kind of a follow the dollars thing, isn't it? Because they'll get more money for kids if their performance is up as opposed to if their performance is down. And the kids that have ADHD don't have to take the testing. Is this kind of where the discrepancy comes in?
Well, there was a bit of that in a few states. And remember, this is a big country.
Right.
The United States is a big country, and state education policy is up to the states. But in a few states, back in the 1990s, this doesn't exist anymore. If they could find a kid who had ADHD, that kid would not be counted in the test scores.
Mm.
But the bigger push was to locate these kids and get them treated, particularly kids who were poor, because their test scores were quite below the average.
Right, which and we hear often, right.
Yeah, no, of course. And then, you know, President Bush picked this up and created the No Child Left Behind policy, which made all the states, the other 20 or so, also tie the the funding, so to speak, it followed the dollars, using your term, to the test scores and reimbursement. So this created the real push-up performance,
right.
Hence the tagline in our book.
So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, years ago, we did not hear about this. You know, there was a kind of boys will be boys. They kind of jumped around a little too much, which, you know, that's still maybe the case. I mean, are we not allowing boys to be boys? And look, it's a good thing that we've diagnosed it. I'm not saying that it's not. And certainly there's some children that are out there being very helped by the medication and the diagnosis. But there's an awful lot of children, as you mentioned, that the high numbers that probably should be maybe looked at further. And your book talks about that. Maybe it has to do more with their home life or other issues that no one's looking at. What are the reasons, aside from school, that we are diagnosing more kids, and especially boys, with ADHD?
Well, boys have always had a higher rate than girls, 2.5 to 1.
Right.
So the rate of 1 to 9 for children in the United States is actually 1 to 6 for boys. And typically, ADHD has two parts. It's hyperactivity and lack of focus, and clearly the boys have more of the hyperactivity. But in the recent years and the data we're looking at, girls are starting to catch up, as there's more equality now between boys and girls and their expectations, the job markets, and the schools. But clearly we're worried about the diagnosis. Often a child will have some problems in school. Usually when they enter school is when the diagnosis comes about, somewhere between the first and third grade, when they're put in a school situation and they have to perform and sit in chairs and, you know, have an exact, regimen to follow. This is when the symptoms appear.
Yeah.
And then they would be, perhaps, you know, the parent would be, would notice this, or the teacher would say something, or the parent would note that the child is having trouble keeping up in school, and they might go to their pediatrician, who might, for lack of, you know, funding and the like, and time, in 10 minutes ask some questions and think that the child has ADHD. And this is a very serious diagnosis, and if the child has it, there's a 70% chance they're going to be put on very powerful medications, Adderall, Ritalin, Concerta. And also, it's a life-changing event for the child and the parents. So we think there needs to be more careful diagnosis, not, 10 or 15 minutes in a pediatrician's office.
Right. I get that. You know, I've interviewed Michael Gurian, who you probably know who he is, and he talks about the difference between boys and girls quite often. And, I mean, we need to recognize that there is a difference. Girls can easily sit around circle time and read books, and boys have a, natural energy that should not be squashed just because it's different. But aside from that, these drugs, these Adderall and the drugs that you mentioned, so many kids and now adults, we're going to get to in a minute, have taken these. Do they give a concentration that allows these kids to do better in testing? Is that another reason we do this?
Well, first of all, let me tell you the misnomer for parents listening to your show. These drugs are not smart pills.
Uh-huh.
They don't make your child or even adult any more intelligent. If they have legitimately ADHD, then it will help them focus. It will allow them to continue reading, to finish the math problem, to stay at their computer. So it does allow them to perform better, but basically we think the combination is the medication and behavioral therapy, so they learn to control their emotions, their impulses, and the like. And this is the most successful combination of treatments. And unfortunately, our healthcare system and in many places actually will pay for the medication, but there are often lots of limits on paying for mental health and the behavioral therapy. We think this is a huge mistake.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's a really excellent point. I mean, I think it's the same with antidepressants and things like that. We need to monitor. You know, people need to talk about what's going on, and they need to be monitored, not just given the drugs. So your book is excellent in talking about that, and excellent in giving recommendations of what to do. I mean, you're pointing out very important, serious problems, but you're also recommending what to do and how to look at it differently. And hopefully school officials and health officials will look at this book and understand what are some of the recommendations, and what should parents, we mentioned parents, what should parents look for if their child's been diagnosed with this?
I think parents are the key to it. They need to be very careful to make sure they have the proper diagnosis. ADHD has a lot of comorbid conditions. That means if a child has something that appears to be ADHD, they're likely to also have something else. Mm. One popular comorbid condition is anxiety disorder, and sometimes, you know, various types of depression. So they really need to clinically get the right diagnosis, because if they are putting the child on Ritalin, Concerta, Adderall, and the problem is something else, this is obviously a disaster for the child to be put on this. So upfront time is very important. And once the child is on this medication, they're clearly on it for years, generally through junior high school and high school. So this is a big decision.
Yeah.
And parents need to be very careful about getting the right clinical input. They need to have the right assessment. Look, a child can act out and not behave well in school, and it may be the problem with the school.
Right.
You know, maybe it's a bad teacher, or maybe
right.
it's an over-restricted school.
Yeah.
So the child has to be observed in different environments, you know, in the house, in the play group. And then if the symptoms are consistent across that, then we're more likely to see a true diagnosis. But obviously it takes time and it takes money, but it's definitely absolutely worth the effort.
Well, you know, and you're right. Parents need to take this on. I have a friend who has a son that has some special needs problems, and they've been putting him on these drugs. And she said, I will not let him be on them in the summer. Now, and her reasoning was he's got to understand who he is and learn how to deal with it. Functioning in school, maybe. I mean, can we do things like that? I mean, can we use these things in shorter terms instead of, as you said, you know, into adolescence and into high school? I mean, can they be used for short-term use and just a little bit of diagnosis and then learn how to control it a little more naturally?
I don't know about a little diagnosis. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that, but they basically, you know, of course, kids have more serious cases. I mean, there's mild ADHD, moderate, and quite severe. A child who's very severe probably needs to be on medication all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and because they're accident prone. If they drive a car, the rate of accidents is just astronomical. They have other accidents, in their daily lives. They also have a lot of impulsive antisocial behavior, so they get stigmatized by their friends, and this is horrible. And then there's the kids in the middle group
right.
who are, you know, likely to need medication, but occasionally if they're not on it, it's not a disaster. And then, of course, there's the milder group, like anything, and they probably could function fairly well without it. Parents often, with children who apparently have what they perceive to be mild cases, do take them off the drugs in the summer because their schedules are not routinized. They
right.
don't have to hand in homework, and they don't
right,
have to
sit exactly.
in the chair. So this is not uncommon. What's good about these drugs, even though they're quite powerful and serious, is they're not addictive.
Uh-huh.
And so you can take the child off and, you know, within a day or so, they don't have a craving to be put back on the drug. And,
well, that's helpful.
It is possible to do that.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. I mean, you know, to look at it and evaluate it instead of just keep them on and cumulatively and all the time. I mean, I don't know, you know, what happens to these drugs when you're on them for so many years. And as you mentioned, you know, adults are getting on it. And why are adults getting on it? And why are college kids all of a sudden taking these drugs?
Yeah, well, that's two scary groups, particularly the college kids. The college kids under a lot of pressure now for getting into that right university,
right.
you know, the one that's going to make your child a doctor or a lawyer or an Ivy League or a judge. And the competition in the U.S. education system has never been greater. It's not only
it's
the
true.
Competition from the American students who all want to go to college, but it's now global competition.
Yeah.
You know, in California, at Berkeley, we have students applying from all over the world.
That's true.
And so anybody in California or anybody has to compete with people from China, from India. So just enormous pressure to do well. And these kids, when they get in college, of course, they want to go to graduate school and medical school. So there's a huge amount of, illegal purchase of these drugs by these students. Again, they're not a smart pill, but they do help you focus and, do all-nighters and the like. But it's dangerous.
Yeah, it's very dangerous.
First of all, it's illegal.
Yeah.
And I think if the student doesn't know it's a felony, they can be put in jail for this. It's a very, very serious matter. And they should be aware of it, and the parents should be aware of it. And secondly, we report in our book a huge spike increase in emergency room visits in hospitals for kids who have bad and negative reactions to taking these drugs.
Including death.
Oh, including death. Yeah,
like
yeah.
Yeah.
There are a few deaths, but there are a lot of other side effects of that. And the issue is often like this. I mean, your body and rate can tolerate 20 milligrams, and the drug you buy is 80 milligrams.
Yeah. It's
so
dangerous. It's so dangerous.
And often doctors will spend a lot of time the first month or so getting the dose right, getting the medication right. There are 40, 60 different variations. And then someone buys it on the street, and there's a disaster.
Well, I suggest, unfortunately, we have to wrap it up, but I suggest that every parent definitely get this book, and maybe every health person, everybody that's working in the mental health industry should really read this book, because I think as important as it is to diagnosis, we don't need a huge diagnosis that doesn't belong to be there. The ADHD explosion, mismedication, money, and today's push for performance. Dr. Scheffler, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Everybody, it's on Shannon's Corner. Everything you hear is always on Shannon's Corner, and a direct link to his book where you can read more and get the book. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new novel. And we're going to talk with Deb Coletti, and she's going to tell us about The Last Forever. So stay where you are. We'll be back in just a few on WTBQ.